could do nothing else, the voice drowning out my thoughts, my consciousness. Clattering sounds, then light bloomed, blasting my eyes. But I didn't move. I didn't know how. Tom's face appeared in front of me and he sneered. You were right that I was passing on information about Aaron, but you were wrong about everything else. You two carry the Sinclair kid, the woman ordered. Tom's face disappeared, and more scuffling sounds followed. Then the light changed, a surge of red and yellow, the crackle of flames, and an agonized howl. The hand on my arm disappeared, and awareness flooded my mind. I recoiled, hitting the door to the walk-in fridge and grabbing the handle for balance. The door swung inward, and I almost fell, my legs trembling. Aaron was halfway up, blood streaking his face. Fire blazed over his arms and his hands clenched around fistfuls of Tom's shirt. Tom screamed, grabbing at Aaron's wrists, but unable to touch the flames that coated his skin. The telekinetic thrust his hand out, and an invisible force shoved Aaron backward. Tom tore free, sobbing as he scrambled away. With a wave of his hand, the telekinetic lifted my abandoned saucepan off the floor, and it streaked toward Aaron's head. He smashed it out of the air with his fist, flames exploding on impact. The telekinetic snapped his hand in a come-hither motion. A butcher knife zoomed across the kitchen and halted inches from my throat. "Stop where you are, she dies," the telekinetic barked. Teeth bared and fear in his eyes, Aaron went still. The fire on his arms flickered out. "If you move," the woman purred, stepping toward him, "you'll get to watch her bleed out all over the floor." She reached for his arm. "No, Aaron!" I yelled. "Don't let her touch you!" Her hand wrapped around his wrist. The fury and fear in his face evaporated, and his expression went as lifeless as a plastic mannequin. The woman turned a simpering smile on me and flipped her blonde hair over her shoulder with her free hand. "Shall we, then?" she said to her accomplices. The telekinetic, his eyes fixed on the floating knife, pointed at my unprotected throat, smirked triumphantly. Openly weeping from his burns, Tom had staggered to the back entrance at the far end of the kitchen, and the woman stared after him, her hand tightly gripping Aaron's wrist. He followed submissively, his eyes vacant. He didn't look at me as they passed. He didn't see me at all, and I knew why. She had control of his mind, just as she'd controlled me. Tom disappeared through the back door, and the woman paused in the threshold. "Why don't we show Darius how serious we are? A dead body in his guild ought to get his attention." Chuckling to herself, she steered Aaron out the door, leaving me with the telekinetic. As they vanished, the butcher knife floated away from me as though an invisible wielder were drawing it back to strike. I stared at the blade, unable to move, nowhere to go. The knife shot from my throat, then veered off course, screeching across the walk-in fridge door. "Tori!" At the other end of the kitchen, Liam hung off the saloon door, one hand stretched toward me. Swearing, the other telekinetic waved emphatically. Two more butcher knives whipped out of the block, and shot catapulted for Liam. He ran toward the projectiles as a huge pot lid flew in front of him like a shield. The knives ricocheted off the lid and everything crashed to the floor. Liam skidded to a stop beside me, hands outstretched as though waiting for the next item to command. The other telekinetic glanced over Liam and sneered. A serrated bread knife pulled from the block's dwindling supply, then a thin-bladed boning knife. As the points swerved in our direction, Liam thrust his hands toward them. The knives stopped where they were, vibrating in the air. A third knife pulled out of the block and spun to face us. Liam gasped, muscles tensed like he was straining against a terrible weight. The three knives vibrated harder. Liam panted, his arms trembling from the effort. The third knife wobbled, then flashed into motion. Liam flung a hand toward it, halting its movement. But the other two broke free and whipped across the distance. Liam fell back, tumbling into me. I grabbed him and threw us into the open walk-in fridge. As I kicked the door shut, the third knife hit the metal with a shriek. Footsteps stomped toward the door, and I wrapped my fists around the handle, determined to hold it closed. "Leave them," the woman called. "We have what we came for." "Fine," the telekinetic snarled, his voice right outside the door. The handle shuddered under my palm, and a terrifying metallic crunch sounded. Then his footsteps thudded away. A door banged. I whirled toward Liam. He lay on his back, hyperventilating, as his hands waved helplessly around his chest, where two knives stuck out of his body.
"Oh, God,"
I whimpered.
"Hold on, Liam."
I fumbled my phone out of my pocket, but there was no reception in the metal-lined fridge. Lurching to the door, I twisted the handle. It didn't move.
"No!"
I moaned, wrenching on it.
"No!"
I battered my shoulder against the door, but the impact didn't so much as shake the heavy insulated metal. I twisted the handle until pain burned through my fingers, but I couldn't make it move. The telekinetic had jammed it. Dropping to my knees beside Liam, the painful chill on the floor spreading through my jeans, I tried to remember a long-ago first aid class. Blood trickled from around the knives, and the handles shifted with every frenzied breath he took.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "I came back. Forgot my sunglasses. Heard you. Shh, Liam."
I wrapped his cold hand in both of mine.
"Just hang in there. Help will be here soon."
He nodded, his face white, and didn't ask the question I knew he was thinking. The question I was desperately avoiding. Help would come, eventually. But would it come soon enough to save Liam's life? Chapter 19. Ezra leaned against the table and I leaned against him. His warm arms banded across my back as though he could squeeze the shivers out of me. I tried to stop my teeth from chattering. An hour trapped in the fridge, desperately hoping Liam wouldn't die before Ezra, Kai, and Felix returned. I'd heard them come in and screamed my head off until they broke the door open. Kai and Felix had rushed Liam away, taking him somewhere. Kai had been on the phone with a woman named Elisabetta, the guild's best healer. I'd already given them a brief rundown of what had happened, but while we waited for Kai to return, I told Ezra everything. As I spoke, he went more and more rigid, his arms like steel clamps. The air around us grew noticeably chill and the lights dimmed. I pretended not to notice. Ezra's phone chimed. Keeping an arm around me, he fished it out of his pocket, the studded knuckles of his bad guy smasher gloves gleaming. He swiped the screen up and read a message.
"Liam is with Elisabetta,"
he murmured, his smooth voice soothing my anxiety.
"Kai and Felix are on their way back, and they've called in the troops. Every guild member they could reach is on their way here."
I nodded against his chest, too exhausted and sick with worry to voice the questions piling up in my head. Ezra cocooned me in his arms again. My shoulder, struck by the telekinetic's murder ball, throbbed nonstop. When the front door snapped open, I jumped half a foot, and Ezra clamped me tighter to him as though I might leap over backward and hurt myself. Zora swept inside, her pink-streaked pixie cut damp and her giant sword in hand, the sheathed straps dragging on the floor. "Got Felix's message," she said tersely. "I'd just stepped out of the shower. What happened?" Now that we had company, I tried to pull out of Ezra's arms, but he didn't let go.
"While we were hunting the rogues,"
he said, an unfamiliar growl in his voice,
"a different group attacked Tori, Liam, and Aaron.
They took Aaron.
Liam is with Elisabetta. Stab wounds."
Zora's eyes blazed. "They took Aaron? How?"
"From what Tori described, it sounded like a mentalist."
She swore with such vileness that I flinched. "You okay, Tori?"
"I'm fine."
I pried myself out of Ezra's embrace.
"What's a mentalist?"
Zora's mouth twisted with distaste. "A type of psychic who can influence the thoughts or actions of..." She broke off as Lyndon the sorcerer strode into the building, followed a moment later by Sin, her hair a tangle and her t-shirt inside out.
"Tori, are you okay?"
Racing past Lyndon, she grabbed my hand.
"Why are you so cold?"
"I got locked in the fridge."
"What?"
"What's happening?"
Lyndon asked, rubbing the stubble on his usually shaved head.
All Felix's message said was Liam is in critical condition, Aaron is missing, and everyone needs to get their asses over here. Felix can explain when he arrives.
Ezra replied.
He's on his way back.
Lyndon nodded toward Ezra's gear, his twin terrors lying on the table behind us.
How did the rogue hunting go? Better than expected. They had no idea we were coming, which makes the rest of this even stranger.
The five of us waited without speaking as the minutes ticked past. More guild members arrived in ones, twos, and threes. Familiar faces like Gwen, Ramsey, and Tay from Kai's rogue hunting team, Andrew, Cameron, and Sierra from the team that had exterminated a vampire nest, Sylvia, the Manhattan-loving sorceress, Riley, Sin's curly-haired alchemist friend, the yoga witch and her boyfriend, others I hadn't seen since my first shift came in as well, gathering silently in the pub. It occurred to me I should offer them drinks or something, but I didn't move from Ezra's side. The atmosphere was tense, the silence oppressive. Some asked what was going on, but Ezra gave the same answer.
Felix will explain.
Finally, the back door thumped, and a moment later Felix strode out of the kitchen with Kai right behind him, still clad in his black warrior gear, looking none the worse for having spent the last several hours tagging rogues. As Felix took a spot in front of the bar, facing the gathered mythics, Kai swept around the table and stopped on my other side.
I'll get straight to business.
Felix glanced at me, then continued.
A rogue guild, dubbed the East Hastings Gang, has been targeting Aaron for 2 weeks. Tonight, while Kai led a team against them, another group showed up here. Liam was critically injured in the fight and Aaron was captured.
Was that group part of the rogue guild? Zora demanded.
We're not sure.
Felix's jaw flexed.
We learned from the rogues that they were hired to abduct Aaron. We also learned tonight that Tom Newberg, our clairaudient, has been passing information to either the rogues or the unknown party, or both.
Gasps rang through the group. Tom, are you sure?
Without a doubt, Felix said, raising his voice over the shocked muttering. Our top priority is finding out who the other party is and why they've targeted Aaron. I haven't been able to reach Darius, but I sent him a detailed message. Same for Gerard, he's in Seattle. For now, it's just us.
I counted the assembled mythics. 26. Just over half the guild.
What do we know about the group who captured Aaron tonight?
Lyndon asked. Felix, Ezra, and Kai looked at me. I cleared my throat nervously. Three people came in through the back door. One was Tom. He mocked me for figuring out he was eavesdropping on conversation so the rogue guild could attack Aaron while he was vulnerable, but... How is Aaron vulnerable? Sierra interrupted, her tone suggesting I was an idiot for thinking Aaron could be exposed to danger.
Anytime Ezra and I aren't with him.
Kai answered shortly. I think Tom was passing his tidbits along to this other group, and they were giving it to the rogues. I tugged nervously at the hem of my shirt. The two other people with him were a telekinetic man and a woman who can control people.
A mentalist,
Ezra added.
A powerful one, with a touch-dependent gift. She forced Aaron to leave with them.
Including Tom, that's three psychic mythics, Zora pointed out. Do we know of any rogue guilds with a heavy inclusion of psychics on their roster?
I can think of a few,
Andrew responded grimly.
But I don't know why any of them would go after Aaron. They have no reason to...
Revenge. Tabitha's cool voice preceded her out of the kitchen. She pushed through the saloon doors, her jaw-length bob perfectly smooth and her Ice Queen expression undisturbed.
What?
Zora snarled. Who wants revenge on Aaron? For what?
Not for anything Aaron has done, but revenge on the Crow and Hammer.
Tabitha stopped beside Felix and held out her phone. A green call symbol glowed on the screen. Go ahead, Darius.
Good evening, everyone.
The deep, vaguely familiar voice of the guildmaster echoed from the phone speaker.
Thank you for coming on such short notice.
Felix's wide eyes darted from the phone to Tabitha and back.
A few minutes ago I received a call.
Darius continued.
The caller demanded I present myself at a specific address in 2 hours.
If I fail to arrive or do not arrive alone, he will kill Aaron.
Lightheaded terror swept through me and I clutched the table for balance.
Unfortunately, the caller did not give me the opportunity to inform him I'm 3,000 miles away. I can't meet his demands, so we'll need a different approach.
Who the hell are these guys? Sin yelled, her hands balled into fists as she glared at the phone.
Thank you, Sin. I was just getting to that.
Darius replied dryly.
6 months ago, I instructed Gerard, Tabitha, and Alistair to investigate the activities of a local guild. Kirk, Connor, and Kasid.
At the guild's name, faint recognition pricked me.
Ostensibly a law firm, the guild's membership is composed entirely of Sikika mythics. Though they present as a legitimate guild, their activities behind closed doors are distinctly unsavory. In short, it's a guild of predators, cheaters, and conmen. Over the past half year, Gerard, Tabitha, and Alistair have done an admirable job of catching their members in numerous illegal activities. The MPD has cracked down on them, banning members and levying destructive fines. Any further charges and the guild will risk dissolution.
Darius paused as though gathering his thoughts.
The reason I assigned this task to our most experienced officers and most powerful mage is because of the threat KCQ presents. It was not a task I wanted other members involved in. Though psychics are often underestimated, KCQ has attracted some dangerous individuals. Tabitha?
The second officer raised her chin. 4 weeks ago, Alistair and I tagged one of KCQ's most promising new recruits, an empath with a frightening ability to influence the emotions of everyone around him. He's now in MPD custody. After his arrest, all activity from the guild went quiet. Her dark eyes flashed to me. The moment I heard what had happened tonight, I knew who was behind it. We took a gifted and powerful young member from KCQ, and now they've taken our most gifted young member in turn. But that isn't the extent of their revenge. Aaron is Darius's protege, and they're using him as bait to lure Darius into the open.
They don't just plan to punish us by killing Aaron,
Lyndon growled.
They want to kill Darius, too.
I believe that is their goal,
Darius agreed, his voice calm but deepened by intensity.
We will not allow them to accomplish either goal. They will deeply regret every moment of their supposed vengeance.
A silent, restless shiver ran through the gathered mythics. I could taste the impending violence in the air.
Tabitha has the address my caller provided, but we can assume that location is a trap. They are likely holding Aaron elsewhere. KCQ has two offices, one registered and one not.
His tone shifted, becoming more businesslike.
Tabitha, in my and Gerard's absence, you are in charge. Aaron's life is in your hands.
I'll get him home safely, she promised.
Good. I'll await your update.
The line clicked. Tabitha slipped her phone into her pocket. We have no time to waste. Tay, contact all our Sikika members who aren't already here. Delegate others to go to their homes if you can't reach them by phone. Felix and Kai, pull up all the information you can find on the three addresses we'll be targeting. I already texted them to you. With one office downtown, one in the West End, and the shipping yard where they told Darius to go, we'll need to coordinate our movements carefully. Felix and Kai sped toward the stairs to the second level. Andrew and Zora, Tabitha continued. Organize the combat mythics present into three teams. Sin, get a hold of our healers. Ezra, print off the profiles of every known KCQ member, 6 copies each. Giving my hand a quick squeeze, Ezra hastened upstairs as well. Sin disappeared downstairs for a quiet place to make calls, and Zora herded the other mythics to the far end of the room. As the purposeful bustle consumed the pub, I squeezed my hands together. No one protested the perils of the mission. No one questioned or complained about their assignments. They moved with determination, with anger burning in their faces. Every person here had come to help Aaron, and not a single one showed the slightest hesitation about going up against a guild Darius had deemed too dangerous for regular members to tackle. Tabitha turned to me. What happened this evening when Aaron was captured? I need all the details. Stumblingly, I described every moment of the encounter, every word I could recall. When I finished, Tabitha nodded. Very well. She murmured, You may leave now. Leave? Your home is the safest place for you. When I started to argue, her cold stare silenced me. You are a liability, and I will not put any more lives at risk to protect you. My whole body went cold, the chill sinking even deeper than hours in a refrigerator could inflict. Consider your employment terminated. She added without sympathy. You were brave, but allowing you to set foot in this building was a mistake from the start. All else aside, I will not see you hurt or killed on my watch. I glanced around desperately, but Kai and Ezra were upstairs and Sin was in the basement. Not a coincidence. Anyone who might have come to my defense was busy elsewhere. Tabitha noticed my searching look. Do you plan to distract them at such a critical time? Go home, Miss Dawson. You do not belong here. My throat constricted so tightly it hurt to swallow. She was right. I didn't belong here. Even if I wanted to argue with her, I couldn't do it now. I couldn't distract Kai and Ezra from saving Aaron, who had less than 2 hours to live. Giving Tabitha my information about tonight's attackers was the extent of my usefulness. The best thing I could do was get out of the way. Forcing my tight fist to open, I nodded and stepped away from the table. No one noticed as I walked around the bar and into the kitchen. The saloon doors swung shut behind me for the last time. Working hard to ignore the splatters of blood on the floor, I got my purse from the office, then picked up the hot pink umbrella Aaron had given me. My hands clenched around it, tears burning my eyes. Determinedly blinking them away, I marched through the back door. A black van was parked crookedly right outside, and a half-dozen other vehicles were crammed into the small lot, including Aaron's red sports car in the corner. The cool night air washed over me as I joined the sidewalk and headed away from the Crow and Hammer, my heart heavy and my lungs hurting. In my mind, I watched Aaron's face go blank as the mentalist woman took control of him. 2 hours before they would kill him in retaliation against Darius. I scarcely noticed the dark road, the boarded-up windows, the graffiti-marked walls. Normally, I would have been nervous as hell walking these streets alone at night, but I didn't care. All I could think about was Aaron. Had Ezra and Kai noticed I was gone? Even if they had, they didn't have time to waste on me tonight. Not when Aaron's life was ticking away with each minute. My shoulders drooped, my steps sluggish. My thoughts and fears were focused on Aaron, but at the back of my mind, pain throbbed. Another job gone. Just like that, I'd been fired again. Even though my position had been temporary from the start, this one hurt more than any job I'd lost before. Trying not to think too hard, I hurried my pace. My mind spun, jumping from topic to topic with lightning speed, wondering where Aaron was, how the Crow and Hammer mythics would get him back safely, how long it would take them to plan their attacks on 3 different locations, how... I stumbled on a non-existent crack in the sidewalk. 3 locations. Stopping beneath a flickering streetlight, I yanked my purse off my shoulder and dug into it. My sunglasses spilled out and hit the pavement, 1 lens shattering. Come on, I hissed. I squirmed my hand through a tangle of receipts, then pulled a crumpled paper free. On it, 3 job listings were printed. 1 for a bartending position, 1 for a bank teller position, and 1 for a receptionist position at a law firm. Kirk, Connor, and Cassid. The Psychic Guild's name had sounded familiar. Now I knew why. I tilted the page toward the streetlight, reading the address. Clark Drive. That was east of here, whereas the downtown and West End offices Tabitha had mentioned were in the opposite direction. This address was for a different office, a 3rd office. And if I was remembering correctly, at the north end of Clark Drive was a gargantuan quay where ocean-going cargo ships loaded and unloaded their freight. Could that be the shipping yard where Darius was supposed to surrender himself?
The dark text on the page stared back at me. A third KCQ office, almost on top of a shipping yard. A location Darius and Tabitha didn't know about. I whipped out my phone and pulled up Kai's number, then hesitated. What if they already knew about this address and it was a dud? Or worse, what if they didn't know, and they split their limited resources even more thinly to investigate it? What if Aaron died because they sent a team out to a meaningless address from a random piece of garbage I'd picked up? But there was a chance, however slim, that it was a real location. Probably not a secret one, since they'd put up a public job posting for it. But maybe it was a new office. One so new, it wasn't registered in Magipol's database yet. Turning on my heel, I strode in the opposite direction of home. Since I was otherwise unneeded for Aaron's rescue efforts, I would make myself useful. I'd check out the location from my printout and determine if it was worth alerting Kai to its existence. No need to distract them. A quick investigation on my own. Nothing dangerous, I wasn't an idiot. I knew I was no match against mythics. And then I'd either call a cab and go home, or I'd call Kai and tell him what I'd discovered. I couldn't save Aaron, but if there was something I could do, no matter how small, then I would do it. Even if it meant going alone to stick my nose in the business of a guild so dangerous, even other mythics steered clear. Chapter 20. Beneath a claustrophobic concrete ceiling, I crouched in a deep patch of shadows. Above me, a low bridge slanted upward, spanning a wide set of train tracks. It had taken me almost 20 minutes to get here, and if I hadn't been busy fearing for Aaron's life, I would have been fearing for my own. Strolling through a slummy commercial area in the middle of the night wasn't the smartest thing I'd ever done. I was at the far end of the downtown east side, the bustling city core 30 long blocks west. I squinted across the road at a run-down two-story building with the address from my printout. Just north of it, the access street ended in a chain-link fence where the train tracks ran parallel to the quay beyond. The bridge above my head connected to the shipping yard. Assuming it was the same shipping yard Tabitha had referred to, I was ridiculously close to the hostage exchange location. My stomach turned sickeningly as I scanned the formerly white office building that was now a dull piss yellow with tattered siding. Scaffolding occupied one ugly wall, and a section of siding had been stripped away. The windows on the lower level were brand new, stickers and labels stuck to the pristine glass, and sturdy plastic barriers were taped over the square openings on the upper level. Lights glowed through the plastic coverings. It was the only building on the block that showed any signs of life. I flinched as a lone tractor trailer drove down the bridge, rattling the concrete above my head. Pressing deeper into the shadows, I pulled my phone out to check the clock. 45 minutes until the 2-hour time limit was up, and saw messages from Kai and Ezra blinking on my screen. My thumb hovered over them. If I called Kai or Ezra now, they would try to include this new location in their plans. But how much would that throw off their current strategy? Did they have enough people to investigate a fourth building? If I was wrong, if KCQ wasn't using this building yet, if Aaron wasn't here, if the lights were from squatters or something, Aaron might die because I'd messed with their plans. I couldn't risk it. I'd check the location myself. Slipping my phone back in my pocket, I focused on the building. Heavy metal gates barricaded the recessed front entrance. If I'd been a mythic, maybe I could have blasted them open. But I was a lame-o human with no magic. I considered the scaffolding, but it was set up against a window-free stretch of wall. No good. Slipping out of my hiding spot, I jogged across the street to check the building's other side. Around the corner, a one-story welding shop butted against the office. On its far side, behind a chain-link gate, was a small lot littered with junk. I eyed the scrap metal piled against the wall, then strode to the fence. Time for some good old breaking and entering. Slinging my purse over my shoulder, maybe I should invest in a fanny pack, I hauled ass over the chain-link gate and dropped down on the opposite side. Keeping to the shadows, I climbed onto a rusting metal barrel,
scrambled across a stack of rotting wood pallets, then used the top of a heavy-duty pipe to propel myself high enough to grab the edge of the rooftop. I dragged myself up, groaning quietly. I needed to work out more. Lots of pull-ups. Biceps are sexy, right? Rolling onto the rooftop, I scampered across it to the office wall. The four windows were covered in plastic, and unlike the others, devoid of light. I pulled my keys out of my purse, jammed one through the plastic, and tore a long opening. Parting the edges, I peered into the dark room on the other side. That was easy. Look at me, trespassing like I did this shit all the time. I slid inside, my shoes landing on something crinkly. Faint light leaked through the half-open door, illuminating the plastic laid across the carpet. The empty room reeked of plaster and fresh paint. With a deep, calming breath, my heart totally wasn't racing out of my chest. I stuck my head out the partially open door, discovering a short hallway carpeted in utilitarian beige. Somewhere ahead, quiet voices murmured. I pulled out my phone, checked it was on silent, then crept down the hall one terrified step at a time. This wasn't my first experience with breaking into a building, but the delinquent phase of my youth was way behind me. I didn't remember being this jumpy back then, and I could have used some of my teenaged overconfidence as I crouched at the end of the hall and peeked into the room beyond. The moment I saw what waited for me, I whipped back out of sight, shaking from head to toe. The good news, I'd found Aaron. The bad news, everything else. Beyond the hall was a largish room with two rows of cubicles, brand new and still wrapped in plastic, with an open space in the center. In that opening was a metal folding chair, and in the chair was Aaron, hands tied behind his back, blindfolded, his mouth duct-taped, and dried blood streaking his face. The mentalist woman stood beside his chair, her hand on the back of his head. Aside from them was, about a dozen other people, probably psychics, probably scumbags. At least three for sure scumbags, the mentalist, the telekinetic, and Tom, his hands and neck covered in gauze. Hands trembling, I withdrew my phone one more time. Why, oh why, hadn't I called Kai sooner? 35 minutes until Darius was supposed to show up at the shipping yard. I minced down the hall, moving farther from the psychics, and opened my messaging app, barely seeing Kai's recent texts, asking where I was and promising to call after Aaron was safe. I typed into my phone and sent the same message to him and Ezra, the address of the office and three words. I found Aaron. Holding my breath, I waited. Would Kai check his phone, or was he already on his way to one of the locations? 20 seconds passed, then 30, then a minute. No response. My finger hesitated over the call button. Tom was here. If I called Kai, no matter how quietly I spoke, the clairaudient would hear.
Rigel!
A man called from the main room. Jumping in fright, I shoved my phone into my purse and slunk toward the voices.
Ivan just messaged me. A Crow and Hammer team is closing in on our Cypress office.
I peeked out as a man rose from a leather office chair and straightened his tailored suit jacket. His black hair was combed back, the style enhancing his stark features and the deep creases around his mouth. "Then it's time," he murmured in a crisp English accent. He positioned himself across from Aaron, who was uncannily still with the mentalist's hand on his head, keeping him under her control. From my angle, I could see what Rigel was doing. Then the sound of a phone ringing on speaker broke the silence. The psychics in the room waited, unmoving. The line clicked.
"Have you decided to return my pyromage?"
Darius's calm, deep voice echoed from the phone.
"Darius,"
Rigel said, ignoring the question.
"I am disappointed." "A mutual sentiment, Rigel. Guild etiquette is simple. We do not interfere in one another's business. Isn't that your personal maxim as well? Don't hit first."
A sneer coated Rigel's tone.
"You broke your own rule, my friend. You struck first. And now I'm hitting back." "I could remind you of the personal standards you once held,"
Darius replied coolly.
"But I suppose the days we shared the same ideals are long past,
Rigel barked a laugh. Those ideals you still cling to are the reason you'll never be able to challenge my place in the mythical and mundane hierarchy. Our estimations of your position in that hierarchy might differ. My firm's clients rule this city, yet you choose to interfere with us. With me. His voice took on a quiet, dangerous edge. You should have known you stood no chance against my guild. No power is sacrosanct when psychics can sway the people who wield it. Just look at your promising young pyromage, reduced to a puppet.
Rigel.
Darius began, anger tinging his voice for the first time. Perhaps watching him die will drive home the ridiculous arrogance that motivated you to strike at me. Are you watching, Darius? Rigel advanced on Aaron, helpless in the chair, and I realized it wasn't a call on speakerphone, but a video call. Oh, God. I had to do something. But what? I didn't have a weapon. Just my hot pink umbrella and...
You're making a mistake.
Darius's voice came through the speaker in a low growl.
Whatever lines you've trampled before, this isn't one you want to cross.
Keeping the phone camera pointed at Aaron, Rigel slipped a hand into his suit jacket and withdrew a black pistol from a hidden holster. And this one definitely wasn't a paintball gun. He leveled it at Aaron's head. I dug into my purse, spilling my belongings across the floor. The Queen of Spades card fluttered to the carpet between my feet. The spell reflected magic, but it couldn't reflect bullets. You started this war, Darius. Rigel waved the mentalist aside, and she shifted out of the way, keeping one hand on Aaron's shoulder. And you're 3,000 miles too far to save anyone. My head jerked up. Rigel knew Darius was on the East Coast. Then he'd never intended to spare Aaron. The last 2 hours had served no other purpose than to make Darius and the guild frantic. A farce to punish them even more. Card in one hand and umbrella in the other. I braced myself.
If you kill him,
Darius snarled, fury breaking through his calm.
I'll teach you what it means to fear power.
Rigel didn't react to the threat. Any final words for your protege?
He can't respond, but he can hear you.
Rigel? No?
Very well.
Rigel handed his phone to a nearby psychic, who stepped back to bring both Aaron and his executioner into frame for Darius. Rigel pointed the gun between Aaron's blindfolded eyes.
Rigel!
Darius roared. I sprinted into the psychic's midst. Flying past the watching mythics, I whipped my umbrella right up into Rigel's wrist. The gun flew from his hand and I jammed the umbrella's handle into his face. As he staggered, I lunged forward, umbrella held like a jousting lance, and jammed its metal top into the mentalist's sternum. She jerked back, her hand slipping off Aaron's arm. Aaron! I screamed. Light the room on fire! I was afraid he would hesitate, would delay for fear of hurting me, but he didn't. With a sizzle of heat, flames burst from him and exploded outward in a howling maelstrom. Holy shit! When Aaron had said he could light a room on fire, I hadn't realized it would be this easy for him. I threw myself toward the bank of cubicles, and as the wall of fire rushed at me, I pointed the Queen of Spades at it. Ovi repercutio! The air rippled, and the flame shot away from me. As Aaron lunged off his chair, the fire washed harmlessly over him and rolled toward the screaming psychics. The blindfolding gag had burned off Aaron's face and flames ate holes in his shirt. Half the room was burning and Rigel had disappeared. Psychics fled in every direction. But not everyone was running. A familiar figure charged through the flames. The telekinetic who'd almost killed Liam flung two daggers into the air and they shot at Aaron. Aaron grabbed the metal chair and swung it, knocking one dagger off course. The other grazed his arm, his blood sizzling in the flames. As the telekinetic waved his hands wildly, bringing the weapons back under control, I popped out from my hidey hole under the desk, grabbed a brand new keyboard and threw it at the telekinetic. Snapping a hand toward the projectile, he brought the keyboard to a halt in midair. But distracted, he let his two knives drop to the floor. Aaron tackled him, flames bursting everywhere.
The man went down with a shriek. A flash of movement in the corner of my eye. The mentalist, her face contorted with either pain or fury, reached for me.
"Oh, no, you don't!"
I yelled as I grabbed the next piece of equipment off the desk. Her eyes widened as she frantically backpedaled. Not fast enough. I smashed the shiny new computer monitor into her head, and she dropped like a rock. She wouldn't be using me as a hostage against Aaron a second time. Another psychic ran out of the smoke and rammed me into the desk. The cubicle wall collapsed, the whole desk smashing into the floor. As his hands closed around my throat, sound blared through my ears and light flashed in my vision. Screams of terror, hideous shrieking, splatters of red blood, wide-staring human eyes glowing red monster eyes, vicious snarls. The hands around my neck disappeared, and the horrific sights and sounds evaporated from my mind. I gasped in a lungful of smoke as Aaron hauled the mythic off me and threw him into a burning cubicle. I grabbed Aaron's offered hand and he pulled me up. Fire had completely consumed his shirt, but his pants were still in one charred piece. The spreading inferno was out of control, and smoke billowed from the burning walls. Eyes stinging, I searched for our next opponent, but the dumb ones were on the floor and the smart ones had already fled.
"This way!"
I coughed, my throat burning as the smoke thickened.
"We can escape out the window!"
With Aaron on my heels, I shot into the hall and scooped my purse off the floor. Halfway through shouldering it, I hurtled through the door into the half-renovated office and almost ran into the gun aimed at my chest. Chapter 21 Tom, his bandages blackened and his eyes blazing with hatred, clutched the pistol in a white-knuckled grip. I whispered, staring at the barrel too close to my heart. Behind me, Aaron radiated heat.
"Hi, Tom."
"Don't move, Aaron," Tom snarled. "If you even twitch, I'll shoot you both."
I didn't move. I didn't even breathe.
"Bitch," Tom hissed bitterly. "Do you have any idea how exclusive this guild is? What it takes to get a chance to join? This was supposed to be my big break."
I leaned back from the gun, but he stepped forward, bringing it closer.
"Tori,"
Aaron said. He sounded calm. Way too calm when my innards were about to decorate the white walls.
"Shut up!"
Tom barked, jerking the gun side to side, like he wasn't sure if my heart was in the center of my chest or on the left. I waited for my life to flash before my eyes, but all I felt was terror so intense it hurt. Aaron lunged for Tom, and the psychic pulled the trigger. The gun clicked. Then Aaron ripped it out of Tom's hand. As I bailed out of the way, Aaron dropped the gun and grabbed Tom by his bandaged neck.
"Interesting thing about guns,"
the pyromage said, his flippant tone marred by a growl.
"Firing a bullet requires fire."
Tom gawked, panic straining his features. With a flex of his muscular arm, Aaron flung Tom into the wall. The clairaudient slid to the floor. I picked myself up, hacking as tears streamed from my burning eyes. Too much smoke. The flames on his skin dying down, Aaron pulled me to the open window. I clambered out and sucked in a desperate lungful of clean air.
"You can suppress gunfire?"
I asked incredulously.
"With effort, concentration, and close proximity."
He pulled me across the rooftop, not toward the pile of junk I'd climbed up, but toward the street.
"Not something I normally count on."
Leaving me standing at the rooftop's edge, he jumped. Hitting the ground in an easy roll, he shot up and held his arms out to me, one streaked with blood from the knife wound. I sat on the edge and pushed off. He caught me, set me on my feet, then sprinted across the access road. I didn't question his rush. I had no intention of stopping either. We weren't out of danger yet. Over half the psychics had escaped the burning room and could be anywhere. As we raced toward the bridge, I glimpsed the second floor windows dancing with the light of flames. Then a gunshot rang through the silence. Aaron flinched at the sound but didn't stop, leaping onto the bridge deck and hauling me after him. From the office entryway, people streamed out, more mythics than had populated the upstairs room. My whole body went cold as I realized more of the guild must have been waiting on the lower level, and now they were chasing us down.
More shots rang out as Aaron and I sprinted up the bridge. Why did they have so many freaking guns? They were mythics. Where the hell was the magic? I'd really prefer fireballs and ice shards to bullets right about now. Lungs burning, throat on fire from smoke inhalation, I clung to Aaron's arm as we crossed the midpoint of the bridge, a quadruple set of train tracks running beneath it. Dark, blocky shapes spread out before us. The shipping yard. More gunfire. Muzzle flashes erupting as the psychics chased us onto the bridge. I tripped and fell, my hands and knees scraping across the pavement, and my purse tumbling away from me. Aaron grabbed my waist and heaved me up, but my left knee decided it didn't want to hold my weight anymore. Pulling me against his side with one hand, he flung the other backward, casting a wall of flame behind us. Lunging toward the bridge rail, he pulled us onto it and jumped. 10 feet below, massive shipping containers were stacked 5 high. We landed on top, the metal booming from the impact, and my leg buckled.
"Hang on, Tori,"
Aaron panted, dragging me up again. Clutching his arm, I glanced down at my lame-ass knee that didn't want to work, and saw the shiny wetness coursing down my calf. Blood. Oh, shit. I'd been shot? Half-carrying me, Aaron launched into a sprint. The container boomed as more people jumped onto it, and Aaron flung fire behind us, more to blind the enemy than to stop them. We ran the length of 2 containers, then jumped down to a lower stack, but we were still 40 freaking feet above the cement quay. Leg crumpling under me, I slumped back into the side of the container. Aaron launched another wave of bright flames at our pursuers, but the shipping container wasn't flammable, and he couldn't keep the flames burning indefinitely. I pressed a hand to my leg, blood squished between my fingers, and wondered why I felt no pain. Too much adrenaline? Dizzy and shaking, I scanned the shipping containers and spotted a stair-like stack farther along where we could climb down, but we'd be exposed to our pursuers the whole way. If they had any bullets left...
"Tori!"
Aaron yanked me toward the container's edge. "Jump!"
"What?
No! We can go that way and..." He pushed me toward the edge and I dug in my heels, clawing at his arms.
"No!"
I screamed, fighting for traction on the steel. The 40-foot drop to unforgiving concrete right behind me.
"Let me go!"
Aaron grabbed my jaw with one hand, forcing my eyes to meet his as firelight flickered across his features.
"Tori, trust me."
Trust him? No, 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 I didn't do that. It never worked out for me, ever. Other people didn't save me, I saved myself. A gunshot blasted through the night and Aaron reeled, blood spraying from the graze across his shoulder. Flinging fire at the gunman, he shouted, "Jump!" I pried my hands off his arm, cast a terrified look across him, then spun around and leaped. Screaming, I plunged downward. Wind howled, then gusted beneath me with insane force. My drop slowed, then I crashed into something much softer than concrete. Arms closed around me, pulling me tight against a warm chest. Light flared above and Aaron jumped off the container pile. As his shadow plunged down, Ezra flung his hand out. The wind whipped into a dense updraft and Aaron landed in a neat roll, then flopped out of it with zero grace. Panting for air, he scrambled up. Without a word, Ezra and Aaron bolted into the labyrinth of shipping containers. I hung in Ezra's arms, gawking uselessly. Where had he come from? How had Aaron known he was there, waiting to catch us? We whipped around a corner, then Aaron and Ezra skidded to a stop. Spread in a line, blocking our path, was the rest of the Psychic Guild. They must have crossed the bridge and entered the yard from a different direction, cutting off our escape. Rigel, his face blistered and bleeding, stood in the center of the line holding a shiny pistol, and a new telekinetic waited behind him, daggers floating at the ready. 2 other psychics pointed guns our way.
"You thought you could escape?" Rigel sneered. "I have telethesians who can track you no matter where you run. I have clairsentience, who can see you no matter where you hide. I have clairaudience who can hear you no matter how quietly you whisper. I have telepaths to coordinate our every move."
Aaron stepped in front of me and Ezra, shielding us from the gunman. Heat radiated off him, but he didn't summon his flames. The psychics were too far, They'd shoot us before he could burn them. Footsteps clattered behind us, and Ezra turned as our pursuers from atop the shipping containers ran out of the darkness, sealing off our escape route. Ezra set me down and pushed me between him and Aaron, their backs to me as they faced the two forces. Mouth opening in a silent laugh, Rigel aimed his gun at Aaron.
It was futile from the beginning, boy.
All the hair on my body stood on end. Lightning leaped out of the darkness in a blinding flash and slammed into Rigel's pistol. The bolt forked and struck the two other guns. The three men holding firearms went down, convulsing. A black-clad figure shot from between two containers, sprinting toward the psychics with electricity rippling over his arms. Kai's hands bristled with small throwing knives, and he hurled them at the psychics without breaking stride. The blades found the vulnerable flesh of the mythics, striking legs and shoulders. Then lightning leaped from Kai's hands to the conductive metal. Behind me, Ezra launched toward the other group of psychics, yanking his pole arm off his back. A gust of wind whipped dust into the psychic's faces. Then he hammered the weapon into the first mythic, throwing him into the nearest container. The hollow metal boomed louder than gunfire. Kai spun through the larger group, his movement swift and decisive. A telekinetic sent a knife flying at him, but the electromage darted aside with eerie, silent grace. He closed in on the telekinetic and executed a flying double kick straight out of a martial arts movie. Landing neatly, he cast his hand wide. Lightning burst off him, seeking his metal knives. It tore through the psychics again, half of them falling to the ground in convulsions. Gunshots rang out, but Kai was a flickering shadow, impossible to hit. Ezra smashed his last opponent into the ground, then ran toward Kai's larger group. The aeromage whipped his weapon in an arc, and a concentrated gust of wind swept the legs out from under another three mythics. Breaking under Kai and Ezra's combined onslaught, the psychics fled into the dark passage between shipping containers. Light flashed. A yellow glow spiraled up the monstrous sword held by a petite woman with a blonde pixie cut. Zora stood with her feet planted, the point of her blade resting on the asphalt as she waited for the psychics to run within her weapon's reach. Arrayed behind her were six more sorcerers. The psychics pulled up short. Kai and Ezra blocked any possible retreat. Trapped, the mythics clustered together. Then, with their heads drooping, they put their hands up in defeat. But, I gasped, goggling at Zora as I huddled against Aaron. Where? How?
The psychics aren't the only ones with the telepath to coordinate their teams,
Aaron said, sounding smug despite his hoarse exhaustion.
Bryce has been yammering in my head since we hit the bridge.
I looked up at him, wide-eyed. That's how he'd known Ezra was waiting to catch us. I couldn't wrap my mind around it as Zora and her team advanced on the dejected psychics. Kai sheathed his handful of throwing knives.
No!
Rigel's hoarse cry cut through the quiet. He pulled himself off the ground, his clothes still smoking from the last lightning attack, and lifted the gun he'd somehow held onto. He aimed the barrel at Kai. Faster than should have been possible, Ezra veered toward Rigel. His pole arm twisted apart, one half in each hand, and light gleamed down the foot-long steel. Then Ezra, soft-spoken Ezra, with a gentle smile, rammed both blades into Rigel's back. Chapter 22. I propped my chin on my palm. Are you sure you don't need help?
I'm good, Justin muttered distractedly. Oh, shit.
He grabbed the pot lid as starchy water boiled over, spilling across the stovetop. Swearing, he scooped noodles into the sizzling wok full of chicken and vegetables. As he reached blindly for the bottle of teriyaki sauce, I nudged it into his hand.
I got this, he said,
upending the bottle over his concoction.
This is my world-famous teriyaki stir-fry. You love it, remember?
I remembered eating it, not loving it. But I nodded noncommittally while saying a silent prayer for the poor vegetables drowning in sauce. Rest in salty peace, carrots and broccoli. Setting the bottle aside, Justin cheerfully tossed the contents of the wok.
This is great. I haven't made this recipe since you moved in.
That's because I usually cook, I pointed out. I don't mind. His enthusiasm dimmed.
You cook for me even when I'm not home, and leave me leftovers in the fridge. Clean the kitchen and keep the apartment spotless.
His hazel eyes, twins to mine, assessed me.
And you pay half my rent and utilities on top of that, even though you're sleeping on the sofa.
I shifted on my chair, a twinge of pain running through my calf where I'd been shot. Not that Justin knew about that. He dished stir-fry into two bowls and slid one to me. I reached for the chopsticks, but he grabbed them first, holding them hostage.
Tori,
he said seriously,
don't worry about rent this month, okay? Just let me help you out this one time until you find a new job.
Looking away from his earnest stare, I heaved a sigh. Okay, just this one month, though. He handed me a pair of chopsticks and I dug them into my meal. Surprisingly, it wasn't too saucy, and the vegetables were crisp. Not bad.
Don't take this the wrong way,
he went on, standing at the counter with his bowl in hand.
But I'm honestly relieved you aren't working at that bar anymore. The place was nothing but trouble.
My chopsticks paused, a piece of chicken hovering over the bowl. I'll find something soon. Maybe another bartending position. Justin slowly chewed his mouthful.
You liked that job, didn't you?
I flapped one hand dismissively. They were a bunch of kooks. Good riddance.
I'm sorry, Tori.
Biting my lip, I fought back the gloomy shroud that had clung to my thoughts for most of the week. After defeating the Psychic Guild 5 days ago, the rest of that night had passed in a whirlwind of activity as more Crow and Hammer members showed up to restrain the psychics and treat injuries. Aaron and I were rushed away to a fancy house in a snazzy neighborhood, where I met the mysterious healer Elisabetta. Unfortunately, I sort of passed out, so I missed all the cool stuff and woke up with my leg already fixed, the gunshot wound replaced by a circle of smooth pink skin. Literal sorcery. I didn't even know how bad the injury had been. All that was left was a slight twinge in the muscle, which Elisabetta assured me would pass within a week. Since then, life had gone back to normal, as in pre-Crow and Hammer normal. I hadn't heard from Aaron, Ezra, or Kai, and even Sin had ghosted me. Was I surprised? Not really. I was just a human, after all. Non-magical nobody here. Why would they bother keeping up with me after I'd been given the boot? I wasn't surprised, but it still hurt. It hurt a lot. As Justin piled dirty dishes into the sink, I slipped my hand into my back pocket, feeling the worn edge of the playing card. The Queen of Spades. My only souvenir of a vacation from reality that had come to an abrupt end. I tried to help Justin clean up, but he shooed me away, reiterating that the meal had been his treat, and he wasn't letting me lift a finger. After freshening up in the bathroom, I grabbed the folder I'd prepared that morning and called a goodbye as I headed out. The early afternoon sun blazed in my eyes as I stepped onto the baking hot sidewalk. My purse, recovered from the battlefield and painstakingly cleaned but still smelling of smoke, hung off my shoulder, and I missed the weight of my pink umbrella, lost in the fire. As I walked into the Sunday bustle, I dejectedly flipped my folder open to the stack of resumes with my spotty employment history. I hadn't bothered including the Crow and Hammer on it. What was the point? I'd lasted less than 3 weeks. Tucking the folder under my arm with my purse, I extended my stride. Before I started dropping off applications, I had one stop to make. The only person to reach out since that night was Clara. She texted yesterday asking me to come in. That was it, just to come in. She probably needed termination paperwork signed or something, and I needed to pick up my final paycheck. The closer I got to the guild, the more my steps slowed. My stomach twisted, compacting my lunch into a queasy ball. I didn't want to go back. I just wanted to forget about the insane magical world I'd entered. Walking in there and seeing that everything and everyone had moved right along with their magical lives without me, it was gonna suck, hardcore. Mentally pulling up my big girl pants, I marched onward. I didn't hesitate again until I reached the guild door with the painted crow, perched on its hammer. Revulsion and the need to run away swept through me, triggered by the spell on the door. But I shoved it open and stepped into the dark interior, momentarily blind after the dazzling sunlight.
Tori!
I caught a glimpse of Sin's blue tresses before she swept me into a crushing embrace. After squeezing all the air from